Welcome everyone to the Sports Weekend. Okay, we're going to start off the show with a pre-record I recently had with Paul Miller.
Good morning everyone, welcome back to the Sports Weekend. Well, we finally caught up with him, former Lincoln Highlander, former Otago and Southland player, and also comments man for Highlanders Radio. Paul Miller, good morning.
Good morning, Avon, and what a great pleasure to be on this station with yourself and all the, folk of Auckland.
Yeah, well, it's always good, and we try and cover Super Rugby as part of our segment. Well, I'm looking at this Highlander side. There has been a lot of talk, and there's probably a lot of talk to come out by the end of this week, and just to let everyone know, this is a pre-record, but we're concentrating purely on the Highlanders, but we will ask a few open-ended questions. I look at this Highlanders side. Yes, there's been a number of key players re-signed, a number of players that have come back into that they've also signed from outside the area. But I look at your back. I look at your back three. Wow, what a back three you've got there. Ratamai, Umu Kimpikins, Caleb Tangatau, Jonah Nariki, but the guy I reckon I'll be very interested to watch will be Xavier Tito Harris.
Right. The young and up and coming these players, I think it's such a great occasion for them just to sort of stand out. However, obviously Xavier's got the formidable Jacob Wright and Muki Nikins and obviously Nariki as well as Tangatau. So it is exciting. However, I guess it's going to be up to the kind of how the season pans out, whether or not Xavier gets a chance. But from what you were saying and from what I hear, an exciting prospect indeed.
Yeah, and of course, then I look at your midfield, and of course, the name Tava Nainai. You know, he has been inspirational. He was inspirational last year, and I think that he's still got a lot to give to this Highlander side.
No, definitely. He obviously didn't get too much of an opportunity when he made the All Blacks. However, he kind of substitutes himself as a fourth loose forward in a way. And, you know, any time there's a ruck or anything like that, you know, you can be assured that Tava Tava Nawai will be the next man in there and obviously trying to snaffle that ball. And, you know, he forms a formidable pairing with the likes of the younger Josh Funga and Jake Dewey as well. So, you know, those two lads is sort of hard running, whereas Tava Tava Nawai is similar as well. So they do form a formidable midfield, and one thing I want to touch on also is defensive, you know, obviously wins those matches. Attacking, yes, we can always go on about how his attacking ability, he always makes that gain line, but it's also the defence structure as well, which is really important for the Highlanders this season, which sort of let them down in bits and pieces last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, then we look at the first 5-8. Josh Jacobs coming in 2027. But this is a huge opportunity for Cam Miller, because for the number of years that Highlanders number 10 since Lima Sopawanga's left has been a real hard position for them to fill. Cam Miller coming off a very, very good super NPC campaign for Otago.
Yeah, he sort of bought himself a lot of time in that NPC campaign, and I guess we go back to the leadership from the top, you know, as you touched on, Mark Brown as well, and I think the lads had a bit more of a license to run, but they had a lot more settledness in their teams every week, and that created that ability for Cam to have a bit more time at the back, and he just seemed to have a lot of time. His attacking was great. Kicking was pinpoint accurate. You know, he's growing and leaps and bounds. Like development wise, you know, he's probably the most influential development player that Otago had. So to see him hopefully cement that first 5 spot, I mean, it's all in front of him now. And, you know, for him to perform, he obviously needs that good engine in front of him to create a bit more time and space for him, which he obviously excelled at for the Otago NPC season last year.
Yeah, and of course, then we look at the halfback, and of course, Volatau Fakatava, he has a former All Black, but has been a great, good servant for the Highlanders, but probably the guy we're all looking forward, but he's out for the season, is Dylan Pledger. Bit of a blow for the Highlanders there.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes these blows can be blessings. So, you know, he's got a lot of pressure on the young man, the young Kings High School boy. He's obviously had an inspirational season with the 20s, and obviously great immaculate season last year with the NPC Otago. Again, him and Cam Miller formed a formidable pairing that you don't really, you know, talk about, you know, got the backs having a formidable pairing. However, it was just their speed to the ball and the quickness of his pass, a la Aaron Smith as such. So, you know, he'll definitely be a loss in that. However, you know, Falau Fakatava's obviously been an experienced campaigner of the halfback position to the Highlanders, and they won't lose anything with Falau coming in. He's probably, if anything, he's a lot more physical around that ruck area, which, you know, which probably will suit their play this season, judging by their back line and obviously their trio as well.
And then I look at your loose forward trios. Not a lot of big names there, but a lot of good, hard-working, you know, good-working loose forwards, like Hugh Renton, really good player. I look at Nakora Broughton, good player. The guy I really impressed, and I'll be hoping he gets good opportunity, is Sean Whitley.
You're right. You know, you've got an element there of workhorses, Sean Whitley and Will Stoddart, also from Southland. And, you know, you've got experience there with TK Howden. He played a really good season last year. And then you got exciting, you know, the flanker Lasanga, he was pretty elusive there, obviously for Otago as well. So yes, I think they're starting to, I guess, work together in a way where their combos are starting to connect. Not forget, you know, you got your other sort of campaigners, Ollie Haig and Nicola Broughton as well. So yeah, there is a bit of depth in that loose forward trio, but you know, it'd be great to see Hugh Renton stay injury free, because obviously his leadership, his experience will be invaluable for the Highlanders in that number 8 loose forward position.
And then we go to the locks. When you talk about locks for the Highlanders, obviously the first name that comes up, big Fabian Holland. What a breakout year he had for the All Blacks, and what a couple of years he's had for the Highlanders. He becomes key. Obviously, Mitch Jansay, a good veteran of Super Rugby. Thomas Lavanini, interesting buy for Argentinian international. It looks as though that they're really grabbing some experience around this young Otago pack.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jamie touched on it last year, Jamie Joseph touched on the average age last year was, I think it was 22.8 or 23 years old. That was average. So it would be interesting to see if they might have gone up in an age, especially with Tarvale coming down from Auckland. So, really experiencing with Lavanini. So hopefully, I guess everyone will be watching him. Hopefully he stays on for a whole sort of 60 minutes or so. So obviously we're trying to get the old yellow cards and get a bit of niggle in there. But again, you know, Jamie might have brought him in to be that type of enforcer, disrupt the old opposition teams, because obviously it's not too much of that going on now, so you don't really get those players, but definitely Lavanini is, and hopefully he can complement obviously Mitch Dunshay and the big man Fabian Holland once he gets the straps on.
Absolutely. And then I look at your front row, obviously Ethan De Groot, but I look at, you know, good veterans like Daniel Leonard Brown, who's been with the Highlanders for a long time, Henry Bell, but then Angus Tarvale. Now I know Angus, and Angus, you know, moving away from the North Island to move down to Dunedin. Jamie's brought him in for his experience.
Yeah, I mean, you've got some really good experienced front rows, and let's not forget they've got a really experienced coach as well with Clark Dermody there too. So, you know, you add those combinations, Ethan De Groot, obviously established All Black. There's a lot of learning for those young ones coming through. The likes of obviously Jack Taylor, still a you know, Route 20s, Henry Bell as well. But then you've got the wider training, and there's some good props coming through that wider training group. So definitely great option to bring in Angus Tarvale for his experience, complementing the younger sort of generation coming through. So no, not a bad ploy from Jamie.
And then we look at, obviously, we look at the coaches. Nothing's been announced. Maybe by the time we get here on Saturday, But it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens around that. The talk is Jamie's still at training, so nothing's changed there. Highlanders, the realistic prospects, can they make the playoffs, Paul?
I think they'll do better than what they did last year. I mean, let's hope. You know, they're coming off the bottom of the table last year. I think they've got a real chance. The only, now I'm just being honest, the only thing I'd be concerned is, you know, two or three injuries, key people, that would probably set them back. I'm not sure of their depth. The depth is really going to be tested this season. I mean, it has been all sort of the last sort of two or three seasons. However, their makeup of their I would say their 22 is great. However, I'm just obviously being honest, and I want to put the X on them, but underneath that, they may struggle a little bit, and obviously we've seen already injuries to obviously Dylan Pledger there, so hopefully these the experienced ones can stay injury-free. So, yeah, I am really hoping and anticipating they will get into that playoffs, because, you know, it's about time that the Highlanders sort of proved to the Dunedin and obviously Southland, North Otago folk that, you know, they can mix it.
Absolutely. Well, Paul, thank you so much for making yourself available. We connected, and hopefully we get to chat during the season, mate.
Definitely. No, looking forward to it. And, definitely be all eyes open for the old first game, Crusaders versus Highlanders at Forsyth Bar Stadium on
Thursday. Because we know you people in Dunedin love the people of Christchurch.
We love the Auckland people better than that.
On that note, have a good day. Cheers.
All right. Thanks, Amon.
Cheers. Good morning, everyone.
That was Paul Miller. So, unfortunately, I wasn't able to raise Steve Gordon, but I was able at the last minute to get a regular rugby correspondent, Stephen Harris, to speak about the Chiefs.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Sports Weekender. Sadly, we haven't been able to get hold of Steve Gordon, but we've got another Stephen who I think's a bloody great expert in rugby, and he understands about the Chiefs as well. So, g'day, Stephen. Happy New Year for the first time back this year, mate.
Yeah, Happy New Year to yourself, Amon, and of course to all your brilliant listeners on an award-winning show. It's a privilege and a pleasure.
Yeah, and likely that we will have you back next week with Mr. Whetton to preview the Super Rugby. I'm just looking at this Chiefs side, and I'm very impressed with what we've got there. For them, their free time, they've lost the final three times. You know, something has got to work for Jono Gibbs. I look at it. Look at their backline. Very good backline. And Leroy Carter, Aroni Nanawai, and, of course, their midfield, Quintipiah. But then you have the first 5-8s, D-Mac and Josh Jacob. How is that going to fit into Jono Gibbs' plans? Does one of them have to drop back to fullback if he needs them?
Oh, listen, I think it's, first of all, it's just great to have some options, and you've almost not quite liked Sean Stevenson, but a player in Kyron Taumofoloi, who just brings a different skill set altogether, but like Stevenson, can play in that fullback, can play in that sort of like fullback wing position. Of course, Etienne Nanaisatoro, there's talk about him heading over shore post Super Rugby. So, you know, the great thing about the Chiefs, they've still got some really good options there as well. And even in that midfield, Kyle Brown is a player who I'm super excited about, the Turbos midfielder, and I understand he got a bit of game time against the Fijian and Drua yesterday as well. Would have loved to have seen some coverage of that match, and also Fokiti as well, coming back from the Waratahs. So, man, they don't lose a hope, but, you know, to my way of thinking, they've still got a lot of great options, even if they have injuries in their back line.
Yeah, and of course, then you look at it, you've got Ratama versus Rowe when it comes to the halfback. I lean towards Xavier Rowe. We look at this loose forward pack. This is an all-star loose forward pack. You have Luke Jacobson. You have Simon Park, Wallace Satiti, Fennell, Boshier. They've got a huge range of loose forwards to pick from, Stephen.
Oh, 100%. Then you throw in Michael Loft, and also the boy Brown, who came across us from the Brumbies as last year. So once again, you know, I think these competitions are also won with the amount of cover that you have as well. If you have not got the cover, you start losing sort of key players, and you have not like-for-like replacements. I think this is where your issues begin. You know, you look at the teams that have won Super Rugby in the past, and it's just those teams. It seems as though down at the Crusaders, they seem to have cover all over the place. And I think, once again, that's the key. A lot of competition for places as well.
Yeah, and I also look at, you look at those locks. They've got their Tupu Vaiojosharoa, both All Blacks this year. And, of course, Natora Arkoi, I think he's really underestimated as far as I'm concerned. If he had been, he must have been close when Razor had the side last year to being brought into the squad.
Yeah, 100%. And once again, they have some absolute brilliant options as well. We haven't even mentioned Josh Ford and Tupu Vai. You know what I mean? It just shows you how ridiculous. But once again, they bring in a young guy that I'm really impressed, and that was Dylan Etty. I thought he was one of the outstanding players of last year's Bunnings NPC, or at least one of the finds with a couple of other kids that were out there as well. And I think with a little bit more bulk on his body, he's a physical specimen as well. So once again, pretty well selected side in that middle row.
Absolutely. And then we look at the front row. Obviously Taki Aho, you look at Norris, who made the All Blacks die, but this really looks like they're finally, and obviously Brodie McAllister, the backup hook, it looks like they're finally, the Chiefs in certain areas are beginning to actually improve a lot.
Yeah, they've got their depth. Really, at the end of the day, they've got a lot of the players back from last year. Like, the only real sort of major loss they had was obviously Bradley Slater, who's gone to the Blues. So you kind of lose a little bit of experience there. But really good two All Black hookers and Taki Aho, and also is it Brodie McAllister?
Yep.
As well, and that's probably the reason why Bradley Slater decided to probably shoot to the Blues with Riccatelli having headed offshore. Yeah, a lot of brilliant cover there.
Absolutely.
I suppose the key thing for the Chiefs in 2026 will that having that different voice be the difference? I kind of think back to last year. I really felt sorry for McMillan, because I do believe he's actually a really, really good coach. And unfortunately, a couple of those big games, they come up with against their nemesis. Say, the side you probably want to avoid is the Crusaders.
Yeah.
When it comes to the end of the competition, and gee, some teams just know how to win competitions. So, hopefully they take a lot of learnings of the last 3 years and they're able to put it into play.
You would think so, because you have a look. They've had three finals in a row. They've lost. At some point something has to click within that Chiefs side. And he has. You look at him. He's got a lot of options here, Stephen. But the big thing is just that. You also feel, is this a better Chiefs side than the one last year? I think this possibly is a better Chiefs side.
Yeah, I agree. We know what Sean Stevenson has a loss, but like I say, picking up Tamu Falau, not quite a like-for-like player, but man, we all know that kid.
Nick, he's an excitement machine.
He's an excitement machine, and he wants to have a big season. We know that he's decided to throw in his lot with New Zealand Rugby, hence is the reason that he's moved to the Chiefs. He probably feels that he's possibly more, black jersey is more within reach if he goes to a New Zealand franchise, as opposed to staying with
Moana.
With NP. Listen, they're not going to be an easy team to beat on their day. What they want to do is make themselves a fortress. Make it Fortress Kirikiriroa down in Hamilton. They want to make it very hard for teams to win down there, and they're more than capable of winning on the road. I just sense, even with the Australian teams, we saw the improvement with those teams last year. those teams are not going to be easy to beat away this year. So I think you got to take your wins. You got to pitch all your cookies at home. And we know what a difficult team is. The Drua is to play away yesterday. I said that was a reasonably close contest yesterday.
Yeah.
Times the Chiefs eventually pulling away and winning it. What was it? 47-31, something like that. But it just also shows you.
Yeah.
And just get through these preseason games. Try not to have too many preseason injuries. Those are always a little bit of a curse. But I see they did the business yesterday without having to push a whole lot of overs.
Yeah, absolutely. And so just in closing, Stephen, the Chiefs, they should make the playoffs.
Oh, 100%, 110%. I see them as a home quarterfinal playoff team.
Yep.
Seriously, and you know what? If you're playing Super Rugby Fantasy, boy, there'll be a few lock-ins out of those sides. Although I do believe the actual makers of Super Fantasy Rugby have got a little bit trickier. The more points you accumulate on these top players, the D-Mix, the more value of those players go up.
Yeah, it's got a huge following, Stephen. As per normal, you come to my rescue. Thank you so much. You are a true legend, and we will talk next week. And if you can get a word in edgeways with Mr. Whetton, there.
I hope so.
Yeah, cheers, thanks. And that was Stephen Harris. So, next up, we're just going to play a bit of music. And next up, we're going to talk Moana Pacifica with former All Black Peter Alateni.
I can tell by the look in your eyes that the storm's coming back again. I can hear in the sound of your voice that you're starting to crack. After all of this time, I'd be lying if I said that I knew how to do it just right. 'Cause the truth is I lose it sometimes, and I need you standing there to remind me that I should say goodbye to all the clouds in my mind. Oh, I know it's been a bumpy road. Keep thinking there's so far to go, but take a look around, it's amazing. If we made it here, then we made it. No better place I'd rather be. All of my people here with me. Never took the time to celebrate it. But if we made it here, then we made it. Oh. Days we would say that we're gonna make it out. How crazy would it be if they could see us now? 'Cause we used to dream so damn big to be in a place that looks just like this. Open your eyes or you just might miss everything that we always wished for. I think it's time to look around. Yeah, I know it's been a bumpy road. Keep thinking there's so far to go, but take a look around, it's amazing. If we made it here, then we made it. No better place I'd rather be. All of my people here with me. Never took the time to celebrate it. 'Cause if we made it here, then we made it.
Well, it looks like everyone...
These days, work moves fast.
Ah, shit. Well, oh, sorry. Apologies here. It looks like everyone's trying to do a runner on me today. I'm going to try one more time for Peter Alatini. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to run down the Moana Pacific squad if he doesn't answer. And then we'll go straight to Ant Strawn after that. So give me a moment, please.
These guys.
This boy can sing, Ned. He can sing.
You ready? Yeah. Stronger days, bitter nights, cold hands, warm heart, walking around, but you're staring the crown, take hold, fall apart. Little by little, someone blows a whistle, hit the matter in the end. So just slow it all down, slow it all down. You gotta take it easy, easy, live your life. Take on any kind of weather, you and me together, we'll be fine. You gotta take it easy, easy, take your time. Just you and me together, any kind of weather, we'll be fine. Open road, broken down, bright lights, dark gown. Stand up, then you fall again. We'll be fine. Easy, easy, take your time. Just you and me together, any kind of weather, we'll be fine. Little by little, someone blows the whistle, it don't matter in the end. So just slow it all down, slow it all down. Little by little, someone blows a whistle, it don't matter in the end. So just slow it all down, slow it all down, yeah.
Well, he's back. Well, we found him. We'll just talk Moana Pacifica, former All Black, my good mate Peter Alatini. Good morning, Peter, and Happy New Year to you.
Oh, good morning, Adrian. Happy New Year to you too.
Oh, you can call me Piggy. You know me, mate. You know me. Hey.
Yeah, I was just trying to, mate, hold back just in case it wasn't Piggy on the online, mate.
Oh, yeah, okay. Hey, just quickly, mate, we're just looking at this Moana Pacifica side. Really, there's, you know, no Artie Sevier, big loss for them this year. But I look at that backline, Will Havili, Solomon Alamano, and then, of course, midfield, Nani Lau Mapi. He's back, and he will make an impact in that midfield for Moana.
Oh, absolutely. Look, The back line with the group they've had a few guys consistently in the squad for a while now, and then they've got some outstanding I suppose game drivers with both William Havili and Pellegrini, and then also Johnny and our halves with Augustine Pulu coming in to add some experience in that space. But yes, Nani Almape coming into the fold, and I've been following a little bit of his training over the summer, and he looks like an absolute beast.
Oh, hell yeah, and he is no better man at breaking the line. Of course, Augustine Pulu, Patrick Pellegrini had a real breakout season. Well, no Artie in there, but Miracle Fulani, yeah. Really good choice as captain.
Absolutely, his story is one to really cherish, really. The fact, and what I loved about Moana, the fact that, you know, this boy, he's come from the islands, has settled, and I've been a big fan since his arrival, just watching the way he's really just learned the game, and the way he plays, and obviously got better each year, and then last year, obviously working alongside Artie Sevier, would have been huge for him, and well rewarded as well as a captain, and I've seen some of his interviews, and And his writing, he's saying he's a man of few words, and we've seen how well he performs on the field, and I'm sure that's what he'll lead us for the season.
And of course, then we have a look at that. We look at the lock, and obviously Jimmy Tupou, he's been around for seems forever, but obviously a guy that I thought had a really great NPC for Northland, Alan Craig, he's in the second row for Moana.
It's fantastic. I mean, these guys have been performed outstanding at NPC. We know that there's another step up when you come into Super Rugby, but what an opportunity. And that's, you know, what the space that Artie's left. I hope that the boys have really captured what is left there for them to continue. And that's going to be the challenge. That there's no reliance. These guys are the ones that have got the opportunity. And that's always been, I suppose, the hindrance of Moana, you know, a few years as they were building until Artie came. Artie gave him some real self-belief.
Yeah, so,
you know what I mean? And he's really built an awesome vibe, and I see it in their socials in terms of the continuation. It's now the transference from what we see and how well they're getting along to how we transfer that into performance week in, week out, which will be the real challenge for Moana going forward.
Yeah, and of course, I look at that front row, Abraham Pole, who I think is a good player, Tito yep. Tuipiloto, Pap Tuipiloto, Sam Mole. Now, he's a guy I like too.
Yep. And they've got good experience too, Piggy. Like, you know, Sam Mole, the boy's your name, Sam Mole has played a few years now in international for Tonga, Tasman. So there's a real sense of feeling now that these boys have got a grasp of it and really take ownership of what's been built for them. I think Tony's doing a fantastic job with his coaching, his coaching group. You know, again, going back to giving that leadership role, the captaincy after Artie to someone like Miracle, is an awesome choice and just a choice that's I suppose it continues on those, the fans that are supporting them wholeheartedly, and he's been a standout player, so really cool in that sense. But I really do hope these guys, and even guys like Nani and them, are coming back, but it's the guys that have been there for a few years that I really want to see them take reign and really, really kind of, you know, build on what they left off last year, which was really exciting.
Yeah, and I thought it was really exciting. They made some big calls. Obviously, Artie been part of it, and it's huge. I think the main thing is for Moana, obviously, to me, realistically, I think they want to improve on last year. And I think what yep. they've built in at Albany is a real fortress. You know, even people that were Blues supporters who live on the North Shore say, yep. stuff that, we're going to Albany because there's better atmosphere there.
It seems like they've captured all the South Africans over the shore, mate, and then they're bringing in their braai and then going through. But you mentioned it, like, you know, it's really fantastic to see all our fans, and, you know, there's a majority that come from South, Central, West, and yeah. they're all making a trip over. And like you said, they've built a fortress there. I just, like, the key for them is just to really capture that and play on that, but really perform. You know, ready to perform week in, week out, so the fans really, really stick on. Because once they get going, like, some of that atmosphere was like the old Super 12, mate.
Yeah, it was.
Seeing those crowds and how they're getting behind them, and that's what we want to see for this competition.
And I think it's the big thing is it's improvement, and I think it's given opportunity for a lot of young Pacific Island players to try and make their grade, and not only from the islands, but and from New Zealand and Australia. And I have to say, last year they were really excited. I'm excited to see how this back line goes. I'll be interested to see if a guy we probably both know for Auckland Club Rugby, Falatau Penny, if he gets a bit of a run.
That's right. He's been a standout, and I've seen that he's worked really hard over the summer, and that's probably just one of the things that he really needed to really capture on, understanding his journey and coming through from, you know, basically club rugby, and then having that stage, and then having some success and going across the NRL. But now, you know, he's got an opportunity in the big stage of Super Rugby, and he's looking the part at the moment, just seeing how fit he's looking, because he can be quite devastating given the opportunity. I just hope he really takes it.
Yeah, it would be good to see, and it gives some of these guys an opportunity, and you know, and you have a look at it. They say, if you look at the number of Southland guys that are play out of the South, there's heaps, mate. You know,
how good is that? Ava Stagland for Busika coming through.
Yeah,
but it's yeah, look, yeah, absolutely, Piggy. I think these guys are getting a genuine opportunity to really perform, and it's, you know, and I can see they're doing the hard work. And it's just a matter of timing of really putting it together as a group, as a collective group, when they get the opportunity to start, when they start this competition.
Absolutely. Well, Peter, we got hold of each other. Thank you. You never let me down, Peter. The next cup of tea is on me, as as you know. We both like the odd cup of tea. So yeah.
Absolutely.
So we'll catch up then. Have a great rest of the week, and good luck with Kings this year in the 1A First 15.
Thank you so much, Peggy. Have a great day, mate.
Cheers, mate. Thanks. Peter Alatini, fantastic. Anyway, next up, I'm just going to get hold of Ant Strawn as we talk a bit of the blues.
Oh, yeah.
Cheers, Peter, mate.
Gift to me, it makes me feel fine. Every little word that you say to me keeps my heart on time. Red blood flowing like a rough rapid when you are nearby. Ain't no doubt, cause it's plain to see. Set a soul fire. Something so true is what I get from you. And I hope that you'll see. Get the best of me. Something so true is what I get from you. And I hope that you see. Get the best of me.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. Now we talk Super Rugby, we talk the Blues. And here to chat to us is a former All Black halfback and radio and a very good radio comments man, Ant Strawn. Good morning to you.
Morning, mate. How are you? Lovely day in Tamaki Makaurau.
It is. Do you know what? It's just this weather. It's just in the past couple of this past week has been great. I've loved it. Now we're going to talk the Blues. And obviously, you don't know if you had a chance to get down to Sacred Heart College to watch them in their pre-season, but I've just done a bit of an assessment on this Blue squad. And I'm going to be quite honest with you. When the squad was announced, and I felt a little underwhelmed. So, but there's been a lot going on the past few weeks, obviously, since the beginning of this year. Hoskins Satutu will be leaving the franchise, Vern Cotters last year, and of course, key injuries in the early rounds to Pat Tui Piloto and Bowden Barrett. But we look at this back three they've got. I've been Caleb Clark, I'm hearing, has been training the Hay House down. Cole Forbes, I've been very impressed with last year, and Zahn Sullivan. Just your assessment on the outside backs there, Ant.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make some good points there, mate. I mean, before I sort of answer that question, it's one of those things I think we all do in this period of the year or just prior to these preseason games. And to be honest, mate, I don't read too much in the preseason games. They're played in 420s. It's really rotational, transitional. They try and get through the whole squad, trying different combinations. And, you know, when you look at a squad preseason, you often just reflect on who was there last year, where'd they finish, what were our strengths and weaknesses, and what needed to be added to a roster to potentially just fill in some deficiencies that you might have. And, of course, you've got to overlay that, as you just mentioned, with some of those injuries. And, I mean, you know, look at Dylan Pledger for the Highlanders.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, a massive loss for them. But if we look more closely to home, you're right. I mean, Patrick Tupilotu, he's getting on in years, but such a good leader. Mana plays well, very consistently. And obviously Bowden Barrett, you know, when he's on song, you know, he'll lead any franchise team to a high level. So, yeah, big losses early on. But, yeah, just going back to your back three, I mean, if you look at the three of them, you know, one of them's had, you know, a fair amount of All Black experience now, and we know when Caleb Clark's in good shape, you know, he's arguably one of the best wingers, if not one of the best left wingers probably in the country. And you're right, he looks like that. I caught up with him at the Global Youth Sevens at Dilworth School. And he's looking in great shape and had a really good positive attitude to, you know, to even being better this season. And, of course, it starts with the Blues. So he's not just a youngster anymore. He's got experience, so he'll have to assist with that back three. And, I mean, Cole Forbes, probably one of the unsung heroes, mate, from the Blues in the last couple of seasons. You know, not touted by many to be able to sort of progress beyond that Super Rugby. But he could play in the midfield, he could play on the wing, he could play at fullback. You know, he's very consistent with what he delivers. And, of course, you've got the youngster in Zane Sullivan, who probably for a few years was caught between a couple of positions. They were touting him out of St. Kent's as more of a 10, and then, of course, they put him to fullback. Thought he played really well for Hawke's Bay at fullback, to be honest. Again, you know, a multifaceted young player, still probably coming to terms with, you know, real high consistency at super level, but exciting, all three of them nonetheless, and it is about a partnership of three. So I think that'll stand them in really good stead. I'm not quite sure who sits behind them in terms of the next cab off the rank. They might
maybe
be a bit
Cade Banks.
There.
Yeah, I think they are. Like, Cade Banks is a good NPC player, but hasn't really been tested at the Super 12, Super Rugby level.
No, but I think also sometimes, you know, these players that pop up at NPC level, and I mean, that's the breeding ground, that's where they come from, the players that get to super level, you know, he's done some really good things. And no, he hasn't set the world alight at super level, but sometimes when you come into, you know, into a new franchise and you make different connections, you know, you get put in a position that probably is where you are the strongest. And, yeah, you just start building from that. So probably no high expectation on him. But, you know, he's got something. I mean, we've seen some special skills and some qualities. He's quick, great feet from him, and he's certainly a try scorer. So, yeah, he'll be a nice addition, and I'm sure they'll use him.
Yeah, and also when we look at the midfield, obviously AJ Lamb will be leaving the franchise at the end of this season. He's been a really good servant. No Rico Ione, he's over in Ireland playing for Leinster. Corey Evans, I felt, was a very underrated player, and I felt he had a good NPC with Northland. But Peter Arkey, they brought him back from France to fill in that gap from Rico.
Yeah, it's a really interesting mix, isn't it? The three players you've just mentioned. One of them, a wealth of international experience. We know how good Pindy Arkey has been playing for Ireland. Peter Arkey, mate. It's a Saturday morning. It's a bit early. I had a High Rocks competition yesterday, mate. I'm absolutely cooked this morning. Peter Arkey, he's multifaceted through the midfield. So he can actually play 12 and 13. But again, you know, just trying to achieve that really high consistency at Super Rugby level. You know, you've got AJ Lamb, big, powerful. Is he a better 12 or is he a better 13? When he's in really good physical shape and his mind's on the job, he's one of the best in the country. But I think for AJ, his challenge is about consistency of training, putting his powerful foot forward, use his voice, and be really dominant. He's a great defender as well when he's on song. And, of course, the young man, you know, Corey Evans, he's young of age, but he's been in Super Rugby for a little while now. And he's had a number of opportunities. He's played 12, 13. He's been played at fullback as well, and also for his province. You know, he came out of school as a 10. So another multifaceted kid who I think probably this year, with the right platform in front of him, he gets good service, obviously, through his halves. Could be one of those players that really sets Super Rugby alight this year.
Absolutely. And then, of course, first 5'8", halfback combination. Finley Christie, number one. Sam Knott, not behind him. Bowden Barrett, he's going to be out for the first part of Super Rugby, but a big chance for Stephen Perifetta.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a million-and-one-dollar question, isn't it? I mean, Stephen Perifetta, we talked about him 4 or 5 years ago, how talented he was, and he was probably the next best pivot for the All Blacks, and he's just been inundated with injuries throughout his career. And I mean, we all got our fingers and toes crossed for him, because he is special when he's 100% fit. So, as you say, probably sits currently behind Bowden Barrett, an older, certainly really experienced player. And of course, the two halves you're talking about as well, with Christie and Knock, again, you know, been around the rugby for a long time, and of course, obviously, Finlay Christie's now had a fair amount of All Black experience as well. So you'd have to say, if we assume that all four of them stayed fit and healthy all season, probably got the best duo of nines and tens across Super Rugby. I mean, those four, not too many deficiencies in any of them. And as I say, you know, wealth of experience, and they know how to drive a team in a game, because they're the critical game drivers that we talk about often in terms, particularly our attack.
Absolutely, and then we look at the loose forwards, and I look at Hoskins Tutu. He's heading over to England, very much likely. I got a feeling we're going to be seeing him next year, later on next year in another tournament. Dalton Papalihi, I think, really had a great tour for the All Blacks 15, and Anton Signer, you know, this is his opportunity to stand out. We've heard so much promise, but I look at some of the backups, and I look at Shea Clark, I look at this guy Rampling from Waikato, who I believe had a great game. Cam Christie's another one I'm very interested, but for this loose forward trio, they really do need, you know, especially for someone like Signer, he really needs to put his hand up.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, if you look at the starting three with, as you say, Satutu, Papalihi and Signer, again, they match up really, really well against the other four franchises in the country. My big question, and it's not a criticism, it's like, what's focus for all three of them as they head into the season? As you mentioned, Hoskins is heading away. How is he going to approach Super Rugby before he departs? Dalton's had an injury or two. He got knocked back, obviously, through the All Black program in terms of not being selected through Razor's processes. And Signer's just been a go-to man, you know. He tried to hold the Auckland team together, had a really tough season, the NPC, and he's a pretty uncompromising, damaging, not fancy, but one of those loose forwards that you actually need to be doing the work and hitting some of those dark spaces. So if they're all in the right mental frame, and I know they'll all be in a good physical shape, you know, they could create some real havoc. And I mean, the very best of Hoskins Satutu is the very best in the country. We all know that, but we don't get to see that a hell of a lot. And then, of course, it sits behind them. You've got that group of youngsters, really promising group of youngsters. I like Rampling. He's tough, doesn't mind mixing it, and plays consistently well in terms of his, particularly his defense. Shea Clark's multi-talented. He can play on an edge. He can play through the middle. Great aerial skills as well. So you got some really nice ones that sit in behind. And we would hope that the three older players, you know, go the way and make sure that they stay ahead of those youngsters.
Yeah.
And hopefully the young ones will be pushing them hard to say, I want your jersey. So then you create some really nice competition within that loose forward trio.
Absolutely. I look at the locks. Obviously, Big Pat's out, and you know he's a big loss. But Sam Dowry really has come into his own since being part of the Blues franchise. Josh Berry, a very underrated player, Ants.
Yeah, got a lot of time for Josh. He actually played at our club, Grammar Tech, here in Auckland. Quite unassuming young man when he arrived, but it was all just about working for him. For those players, probably not touted as world-class because maybe he's not the tallest in that middle row. But the amount of work he gets through in the game, he carries a lot through the middle. He's pretty accurate with his defense. And he does the job as a line-out option for them. And, of course, his scrummaging technique and stuff's really good as well. So he had a massive 2025. And you just like to think that he can just bottle that up and just, you know, take another small step forward this year, because he's going to be critical to the Blues. And Dowry, you know, when he was missing, you know, teams often went missing. So he's absolutely quite, I mean, he's an All Black lock, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
He just wants to re-enter the fray, and he doesn't have to be in a rush. But again, he just needs to get the work, work in partnership with Josh and obviously some of those other locks that sit around the group. But they'll form a nice partnership, those two, because, mate, fundamentally, if you think of the way they play, they are workers. They're not loafers, those two. So, you know, they'll do a lot of the tough work for this Blues outfit.
And, of course, then we have a look at Onga Tungi Tafasa's back. Jordan Lay, always good. Josh, Fushitua, I was impressed with him last year with the Blues. And then I look at the hookers. Now, I'm going to say this, Kurt Eklund, great veteran. Brad Slater has come up from the Chiefs area. But this guy, James Mullins, from former Canterbury player, but involved now with Northland and the Blues, he looks like someone to keep an eye out for this season.
Yeah, I totally agree. I really like what he's produced so far before this season. And of course, you mentioned Slater, pretty similar, probably cut from the same cloth as Kurt Eklund. Tough, uncompromising, and highly competitive, the two of them. And now had a fair amount of experience, you know, in and around black jerseys as well, the New Zealand Māori team for Kurt. And he's synonymous now with this Blues team. And he just needs to keep bringing that. Man, he can still get better. Even though these guys are getting a bit older, they can still improve. And it's about just creating a really positive, competitive environment amongst the hookers. And of course, you mentioned the props, the names you mentioned. I mean, Ofa Tungafasi, probably one of the most experienced props running around the country right now. You know, he's had some injury concerns over the last little while, but if he's 100% fit, and my only worry, mate, is Alf said, if they're going to stay fit in this little short interview. Because there are a few of those, eh, that if they lose them early on, it's going to put pressure on that second layer. But they probably need to do a bit more work. Josh Whitsitoa, obviously, he is the future. I know he's been touted as, you know, real close and up within that All Black group. So he just needs to keep continuing his process and his performances too. And he's a great kid. I've had some time with him as a coach, club level. He's the sort of character, I think, that this All-Black team, you know, and obviously the Blues team need.
Absolutely, and of course then, you know, we look at it, Ben Carter last year, he'd like to leave his mark, because, you know, he's been great for the franchise. And
yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of time for Ben, you know. Some tout him to be a little old school. We hear that so often nowadays. Yeah, we could sit here half an hour debating what old
school means. Oh, God, you
know. I think most of our rugby teams in the country from the bottom all the way up could do it a bit more old school, to be honest, because old school was just about behaviours and how you conducted yourself, to be fair.
Yeah, it was.
But that aside, you know, Vern is very much true to himself. He works well with people, but I think he understands pretty early on what the profile of the group he has in front of him, what they need to be at their best, and he keeps things pretty simplistic. It's not overly complicated. He uses his support for Halloran, see the other coaches have had over the last little while. He uses that, his team, his coaching team.
Absolutely.
But, you know, what Vern says is straight up, no bullshit, and I think you know where you stand. And of course, here's another one. I mean, you talked about Hoskins, Satutu heading off at the end of the season. There might be a few more, and Vern is too. I reckon sometimes coaches are better in their last year before they depart, because they want to leave a bit of a legacy. You know, they want to build on what they've developed. He's won a competition already last year, and then of course this year. And I think, man, he's the sort of guy, he's true. He's an honest bugger, and I think he'll do his very, very, very best to make sure that this team, even though he's departing, will be playing, you know, at an optimum level.
Yeah, okay, cheers. Well, first of all, Ant, thanks for your time, mate, and hopefully we can have a chat during the year.
Mate, any time at all.
Cheers, Ant, and not too much grammar on next time, please.
Got to keep dropping that in there, buddy, you know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Clev.
I'll mention suburbs and Eden and those a few times, mate. Don't worry, I'll get
I'm
to
I'm not
you,
a right? suburbs Eden man, but you definitely can. Okay, ta-da, bye.
Yeah, buddy.
Ed Straw, bloody good. Okay, next up, Garth Galloway. We've got to talk cricket. Thanks a lot, Ant. Really good. Thanks, Ant. Thanks, mate. Really appreciated that. Yeah, no. Yeah. Okay, cheers. Thanks a lot, man. Bye. Yeah, good. Okay, we'll talk about the 2020s between New Zealand and India, and we'll talk a bit about Super Smash. Are you doing commentary on that? Okay, we'll make this quick because I know you got to get down to Hagley, so and I had my mic on, so apologies there, people. Anyway, we'll talk a bit of cricket, and here to join us, as he always joins us on a Saturday, Garth Galloway. Good morning to you, young man.
Good morning, sir. Young man is good. I like that. Good start.
Yeah, good. Well, I have to because I was late. Anyway, let's talk about the 2020s that have been played. Obviously, the third international, 153 for 9, New Zealand. The Phillips, 48 for 40 balls. Chapman had a real good innings, and Satna really started to hit out at the end, but India just absolutely destroyed it. Sharma's innings of 68 of 20 balls.
Yeah, they're incredible, and it was, it was really nice to see New Zealand come back in that fourth T20 match, wasn't it, Eamon? They were obliterated in that game. You know, it's interesting when you see these short games, sometimes you see a side scoring a total, as we did actually in the Super Smash Eliminator final in the men's game yesterday, where Auckland only scored 106. And I love the way that the sides just go out and try and knock those mediocre totals off as quickly as possible. You saw India doing it, and it was just, 15 runs and over. I mean, unbelievable striking. The game's changed, you know. The game really has changed. And you know, this is the thing that I've talked to you about quite a few times now, Eamon, is that if you look at the strike rates that are occurring in this series, they are phenomenal. And it's exactly what I was saying to you at the start of that England series when New Zealand played them in October last year, that my concern has been that the New Zealand players are not striking as well as some of those players overseas. And this series is going to be invaluable in terms of their build-up for the World Cup. They're starting to turn things a little bit.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course then New Zealand gained a victory in that fourth one, a real good score of 215 for 7. Seifert, 62, really good hitting. Conway, very good innings by Conway at the start, but Daryl Mitchell's innings right at the end really solidified that 215 for 7. In the end, we bowled out India for 165. Some really good bowling by Mitch Shatner, 3 for 26 off his 4.
Yes, yeah, and you're right to highlight the batting at the start. I mean, I think 215 was, it kind of felt like a par score on that pitch, and I think that's again, when I talk about things having changed, you know, you're looking at sides now which are able to get to score at 10 or 11 runs and over in T20 cricket. It's pretty tough out there for the bowlers and the fielders and so on, but I think you're right. Conway and Seifert at the top were very good. I thought Seifert's innings is really reassuring from a New Zealand point of view, again, with that World Cup coming up. And you know, hopefully it means that when Finn Allen turns up, he will be able to perform as well in that environment and in those conditions. You know, they're tailor-made for batting. Another good contribution by Phillips, and as you say, an excellent effort by Daryl Mitchell. And I just thought Santner's bowling, I mean, the first time really that he's totally come into his own in that series. You could see how much the Indians admire and respect him. Well known, having played for Chennai over there in the IPL for a number of seasons from time to time. I just thought his leadership and the way that they steered things was very good. And again, if we're looking at the New Zealand bowlers and just seeing what's happening there, you know, top of the bowling averages, and I'm talking about runs per wicket, sits Jacob Duffy. You know, 5 wickets in the series at an average of 27.2 and an economy rate of 9.95. And that might sound just a little bit expensive, but when you think there's only one bowler who's bowled in a number of the games who's got a bowl, you know, an average of 7.63, under 8, and that's Jasprit Bumrah. And then most of the other bowlers are going at, you know, high 8s or the 9s and 10s or more. So it's a, you know, it's a very difficult, it's a difficult place to bowl, that's for sure. But Duffy is sitting on top of the bowling averages, Sodhi not too far away, and Santner performing well. And, you know, it's not a place I'd want to play if I was bowling, Eamon, but I do think it's great to see Duffy competing and the New Zealanders going well. The one question mark for me remains Ravindra batting at 3. they need a lot more out of him. Going into this series, his T20 average was 20. You know, these are not world-class stats from a very fine player. And, you know, I know he'll be working hard and doing his very best to raise those figures, but New Zealand need a lot more from him.
Absolutely. Then we move on to the local game. Super Smash Finals. Women's Wellington Blades versus Auckland Hearts. And at 5 p.m. as Northern Brave versus the Canterbury Knights, and you can listen to that on Sports Nation. You'll hear a familiar voice in the commentary box. Garth, you commentated both those games yesterday. What, you know, really, I know there's been a lot said about the Super Smash and a lot said about 2020, what it should be, competitions in New Zealand, but I look at it, I think there's been a lot of, the cricket has been very good this year.
Yeah, I think it has been. I agree, actually. I do think the competition is strong. You are seeing some players starting to emerge as well. You know, not just the same old names. You know, I do think the women's competition has improved a lot. You know, there are some quite exciting young players starting to develop. The game yesterday, you know, Northern Brave, who have been in the last three, four eliminator finals now. They've never made a final, which is incredible in 19 years of this competition, the Northern Brave. I thought Jess Watkins' decision to bat first was a good one. She made a very cheerful 31. She clipped the ball all around the place, but you had the other top three batters just threw their wickets away, unfortunately, and you just felt at that stage against a pretty experienced Auckland side that they were going to struggle. Nancy Patel, I thought, batted beautifully for her 46. She's a real character, and it looks like she's just getting into a sort of golden period in her career where she's learning how to build scores in that difficult environment. So they'll play the Auckland side, of course, and then with their batting, I thought they batted particularly well, chasing down 139 to win the game. Prue Catton's 50 was an excellent innings. Gaze just threw a wicket away, but that's going to happen. She's always going to strike at the top. And then really good innings from Maddie Green and Brooke Halliday. I thought Brooke Halliday's innings was a masterclass in pacing and innings. She didn't hit the ball in the air, and she really is starting to look like a top-class player. They play the Wellington Blaze. The Blaze, of course, as you will know, are going for three in a row. And they were sitting on the bank looking at proceedings yesterday, looking pretty comfortable and confident. No Mealy Kerr, but they have a lot of stars. And then in the other eliminator final, Canterbury just whitewashed. They just destroyed Auckland, really. Auckland, a modest total of 106, and Canterbury taking, I think, 11 overs to knock them off. Chad Bowes scoring 50 in his 100th Super Smash game for Canterbury. Mm. And a terrific innings by him. So the final today, the Northern Brave are the top qualifiers, and you'll have a Canterbury side playing against them with the likes of Tom Latham and Mitch Hay and a few younger players as well. It should be a great contest and a decent crowd, given that the home side's made it through to the final.
Absolutely, and hopefully we get a good crowd out there in Christchurch.
Yeah, I think we will.
Yeah, your feelings just on centralising, having the finals in a centralised area. Do you think does it work?
Yeah, well I think it's I quite like it because you can have those 2 days. I do think it works. It obviously works a lot better if the home team through to the eliminator final. I mean, the reality is that there weren't too many people watching the women's game there. I think a lot of people would like to come in and see the women's final. You know, there are some good White Ferns players playing and some other players coming through. So a lot of talent on show. And of course, in the evening, I do think you'll get a pretty full house with Canterbury playing. A lot of people will turn up and see that. And of course, they won't have planned to do it because Canterbury having to get through yesterday, but they did that well. So I do favour the format. I think it's nice for everybody to be in the same place for a couple of days. Obviously, if the home teams get through, you're going to have a bit more interest.
Absolutely. Well, Garth, thank you so much for making yourself available. And hopefully you have a good call. And I'll try and listen in as best I can. If not,
good man.
I will watch the TV, but listen to the Sports Nation's radio commentary.
That's the way. That's the way. Good man. That's what I like to hear. Everyone should do that.
Hey, Garth, have a great rest of the weekend. Cheers, mate. Thanks.
You too. Cheers. Cheers.
That was Garth Galloway. So next up, we will. I'm going to have a quick word to Seamus Martin as we talk football.
Mm-hmm. treats me okay. She treats me okay. And my girl, yeah. She makes a winter's day feel like summer. That's why I need her, yeah. So don't ever feel you have to change for me, baby. Hey, so I'll tell you, baby, don't let your life fade. Don't let your life fade. Now I found the one. I'll ask you to forever be my lady. Forever be my lady. Now I found the one. I'll ask you to forever be my lady. Forever be mine, oh my.
Won't you be my pretty lady? Baby girl, you just got me going crazy. Won't you be my pretty lady? Say my girl,
my girl, yeah.
She treats me just fine, baby, yeah.
My girl, yeah.
Just like the sun, she shines so bright. She's all mine, and she never
never
takes me for granted.
We are back, and a big shout out to our sponsor, Robert Thompson from Barford and Thompson. And I can tell you something, if you're looking to buy or sell a property in the Auckland area, he's the man, because he will be able to guide you with the best advice. So I'll give you Robert's number, and let's bring this up quickly. And by the way, Robert, happy birthday. 021-737-949, or you can email them r.thompson@barfords.co.nz, and here to join us as he joins us every Saturday. Football expert Seamus Martin, good morning to you, young man.
Good morning, and a belated happy birthday it is to Robert Thompson. I gather it was his 21st during the week, I think, I've heard.
Well, I think
party this weekend.
Yeah, well... He forgot to tell me about the party, actually. I better be careful. I don't think he's gone down to the TAB to make a bet on our EPL picks, because he...
I guess we might have spoiled his birthday party if he reviewed our picks, because I mean, I was improved on last week. I got three this week.
Yeah, I know.
It was two the week before, but some small improvements, but jeepers, it's not going well, is it?
Well, because it's an interested EPL, but we go into the second round. It's in Papua New Guinea of the AFC Pro League, which has really proven to be an interesting competition. Obviously, Auckland FC really are the top. South Melbourne look good, but there are a number of games in Papua New Guinea today, like Vanuatu United versus Tahiti United. Papua New Guinea Hakere United take on Auckland FC, South Island. The South versus the South Island United take on South Melbourne. Now, that will be interesting. And Fiji and Buller take on the Solomon Kings.
Yeah, look, I think, look, wonderful addition. I've said this a couple of times. Every time we've spoken about it, I've spoken about how I think this OFC Pro League is such a good addition, not only for the New Zealand clubs that are in it, Auckland FC and South Island United, but also for the whole confederation. And look, I'll be really interested. The crowds that we had on the opening round at Eden Park were excellent. Midweek at North Harbour Stadium, you can expect there to be a drop-off, but it was pretty well supported on the weekend before it left New Zealand and packed up and headed up to Port Moresby, which, having spent about 18 months living up there a few years back, there's a real, well, it's a rugby league country, let's put, yep, no two ways about it, but there is a strong support for football there. And I recall we had the OFC Nations Cup when Papua New Guinea pushed the All Whites, actually, all the way to a penalty shootout for a place at the Confederations Cup. So, look, there should be well supported. There's a strong Solomon Island and Fijian community up there as well, so look, I think these matches will be well attended, and it's an excellent facility up there. The PNG National Stadium they'll be playing at is earmarked to be the home base for the NRL club, which is the 18th team which will enter the rugby league competition in 2027. So no excuses in terms of the playing surface. That should be fantastic. But on the field, Auckland FC later on today kick off their campaign in that second series against the home team, PNG Hikari FC. And look, I think Auckland will be too strong there. Hikari really looked like they struggled in that first series. Even on home soil, I think Auckland should win that one comfortably. You mentioned the South Island United versus South Melbourne. That's a really tasty encounter on paper. I think the Australians, South Melbourne, just by virtue of having had a little bit more time together, probably will edge out South Island United. As we look ahead to the midweek games, Auckland FC will take on Tahiti United, and South Island United will take on the Solomon Kings as that match concludes, and that round continues. But we can talk about the final matches next week when we get together. But I think Auckland FC really looked the polished performance. 3 wins from 3 in that first series here in New Zealand. I think they will probably go through the second series unbeaten as well. The only possible blip on the road could be when they take on the Solomon Kings in that last match day. But look, fantastic to see a good group of young players. Some names that we are familiar with really stood up, and there were some new names to come in as well from the various teams. So look, expect big things from a guy like Roy Krishna too, who probably had an up and down first series here in Auckland. He'll be looking to bounce back with a few goals up there in Papua New Guinea.
Absolutely, and of course, then we move to the A-League. Well, the Phoenix will be kicking themselves. Absolutely kicking themselves. 2-0, as they scored two very good goals, and then obviously two goals which they should never have let happen. Albert Kelly-Hill probably shouldn't have came out of the box early. Bill Tuiloma will not want to have a look, and then we came down to a penalty to win it. Mandraker James misses. Chiefy, whatever here he's got left will be gone.
Yeah, look, the 500th game for Wellington, a milestone match in an 18-year, I think it is, time in the A-League, and it would have been fantastic for them to celebrate with a win. And at 2-0 up, they were in cruise control, weren't they? It didn't look like Melbourne City were going to fire a shot, but yeah, two moments, unfortunately, for the goalkeeper, Kelly Heald, in his first start for the season, and then Bill Tuiloma, the experienced player who's come back from America, just seemed to take his eye off the ball, didn't he, and got all in a tangle, and that let Melbourne City in. And yeah, look, Mandraker James, he scored from the penalty spot earlier this season. There were some eyebrows raised when he stepped forward to take it. He said confidently in the post-match comments, "I am the regular penalty taker. It is my responsibility." So it didn't come as a surprise that in stoppage time, he stepped forward to try and slot it home from the penalty spot. But unfortunately for him, Patrick Beach in goal for Melbourne became the villain of the storyline for the Yellow Fever. Push the penalty save away. 2-2 is not a terrible result. It's still a point. It's still a positive step in the right direction. But from 2-0 up, you'd expect a team that are looking to get into the top six to shut up shop and comfortably win that game. So 2 points lost, it should be said, for Giancarlo Italiano's side.
And then we move on to tomorrow night's game between Auckland FC. I think, no, tonight's game between Auckland FC and Perth Glory. Now, this Auckland FC really need this win, because I'm just looking at them, I just feel that they've got the jitters at the moment.
Yeah, look, it was a little bit like Wellington's performance last night, wasn't it? Auckland FC last week against Central Coast, they should have comfortably wrapped up the 3 points there, and in the end it was the Mariners who came back to level that one up 2-2. Perth wasn't a happy hunting ground for Auckland last year. I think that was the scene of their first defeat in their season one campaign. It's a long way to travel to go for a match. It kicks off, I think, 11:30, so pretty much almost tomorrow morning by the time that game gets away in earnest. And I think you're right. I think Auckland, they need a statement performance here just to get back onto, just to get a bit of confidence back, I would say, because it's not like they're struggling. I mean, they're still up in the top two in the conversation to win out the Premier's plate for the second year in a row, but it just doesn't seem to be the same. And I feel like a broken record, Eamon, saying this every week, but it's not the same confident Auckland FC that we've got so used to seeing based off last year's performances. They just seem a little bit jittery at times, where they should be in control of these games and putting them away like they did last year. So Perth at home are a difficult proposition. Adam Griffiths has got them playing very, very good football. They lost last week to Western Sydney Wanderers. Look, I can see this one maybe ending in a draw, but I'd like, for the Port's sake, for for some of the home matches coming up, including a big game against Sydney FC, that Auckland FC get the 3 points and come all the way back across the Tasman a little bit happier and buoyed going into that huge clash next week against Sydney FC.
Absolutely. Now we move on, and of course the Women's A-League. Phoenix Women really are playing good football. They've got Newcastle this weekend away. A win for Bev Priestman's team really puts them in the hunt in the top two for at least the home semi.
Look, fantastic performance last week in a 3-1 win over Adelaide, in spite of all of the injuries, all of the off-field situations they've had, robbing Bev Priestman of some of her marquee signings. You think of Madag, who did her ACL earlier in the year. Alyssa Winham has done her ACL. And then, of course, Samba does her ACL. And then you get the news of CJ Bott announcing that she's pregnant, which is fantastic news for her. But, gee, such a kick in the guts for Bev Priestman. Four of those big players of hers have been ruled out for the season. But the new one stepped forward, and that was a statement performance against Adelaide. Really, really impressive at Porirua Park. They come up against a Newcastle Jets team away from home that have got a Kiwi flavour of their own. I think four of the Newcastle squad, all New Zealand passport holders, and their coach, Stephen Hoyle, spent a long, long time here in domestic football. And look, Newcastle are another side that are rejuvenated. But look, I fancy Wellington. I fancy them in this game against Newcastle. It'll be a difficult encounter, but I think if they can come away with maybe a battling point or even a win away from the ditch, then they are the real deal in terms of the conversation about perhaps winning the Premier's plate and getting into the finals for the very first time.
Absolutely. Now we go to our favourite segment of the show. R18, a bit responsible, guys, and don't listen to us. Anyway, we started off 3 games, 4 a.m. tomorrow morning. Leeds versus Arsenal, Wolverhampton Wanderers versus AFC Bournemouth, and Brighton versus Everton.
Well, look, you mentioned R18, bit responsibly. I've gone with the TAB's favourites in all of the matches for this round. So Brighton, Everton, I've gone with the home team Brighton to beat the team from Merseyside. Arsenal, who tripped up against your mob Manchester United last weekend, I think they'll come back to winning ways against Leeds. And this one's a bit of more of a difficult one to pick, Wolves versus Bournemouth. Wolves really still fighting relegation, trying to stave that off. We're trying to stay in touch at least even with the other two teams in the drop zone. But I think AFC Bournemouth will be too strong for Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Okay, that looks like a potential 1 out of 3 at this stage. But okay, so we go to the final two games tomorrow morning. Chelsea versus West Ham and a bit of a London derby. And Liverpool, really, Liverpool versus Newcastle.
Yeah, Chelsea-West Ham London derby. I'm backing West Ham fans, but I'm backing Chelsea to win that one. Liverpool-Newcastle, the bookies have got Liverpool as the favourites at home at Anfield, but cheap as their form has been up and down. You know, a great win in the Champions League midweek. They had a win over Marseille. They've had a loss against Bournemouth as well. I think that one's really hard to pick. My gut says Liverpool, but I'm going to go with a draw for that game between those two to round out the matches overnight.
Absolutely. And then we go to Monday, and we've got a lot of, so we'll go to the first three Monday games. Aston Villa versus Brentford, Manchester United rejuvenated playing Carrick Ball versus Fulham, Nottingham Forest versus Crystal Palace.
Look, Aston Villa versus Brentford is a really tough one for me to pick. I do like both these teams, and I think form suggests Aston Villa will win that one. Man United are rejuvenated, as much as it pains me to say, and I think they will account for Fulham in that game. And Nottingham Forest, while they start in a much lower position than Crystal Palace, I think Forest are on their way back as well. So I'm going to tip the home sides in those three games, Aston Villa, Manchester United, and Nottingham Forest.
And then we have Spurs versus Manchester City, and then on the Tuesday we have Sunderland versus Burnley. Guardiola, he's under a lot of pressure, isn't he?
Well, it's two managers under pressure in this Tottenham versus Manchester City
Thomas
game.
Frank as well.
Frank and Guardiola both haven't had seasons that they would have perhaps hoped that their teams would have. I still think Manchester City have too much quality to defeat Tottenham Hotspur and put even more pressure on Frank. Jeez, it's a poison chalice, isn't it? Seeming to be that Tottenham Hotspur managerial position. We saw Big Ange Postecoglou get bumped out after winning their Europa Cup last year. And Thomas Frank, who'd done great things with Brentford, just hasn't seemed to be able to find that same groove with Tottenham. So, look, in that one, I'm tipping Manchester City to beat Tottenham Hotspur and to round out the match day 24. I think Sunderland at the Stadium of Light are one of the better teams. Their home form has been excellent. I think they'll be too strong for Burnley, who are trying desperately to stay in the Premier League for next season.
Absolutely. Well, the rest of the weekend, how's it mapping for you at this stage, Mr. Martin?
Heading down to Taupo, just pulled over in Teedale, so I'm going to go and visit the Great Lake, my spiritual hometown. Maybe catch a little bit of Pro League if I can stay awake. If the young fella keeps me awake at night, I've got the Auckland FC Perth Glory game to enjoy as well.
Yeah, and if he does need some sleep, young fella, I'm giving you a bit of advice. You know, sleeping can be hard, not only for babies but for the parents. So anyone, the podcast will be up of my show straight after I finish it at 11:45.
Excellent. Sounds great.
Yeah. Hey, have a good weekend, Seamus, and thank you, as always, for making yourself available. Just one thing before we go. I'm a little concerned at the moment. Obviously, the All Whites we've got our internationals in March, but I've got a real big concern, not only about the World Cup as whether it goes ahead, because it's beginning to look, it's not looking too good with fans being banned, but I will say this, I'm concerned that we may not have Chris Wood there.
Yeah, look, it doesn't, it doesn't seem to be a particularly positive situation at the moment for Chris Wood. Yeah, let's hope that that they're managing expectations and maybe just keeping us in the dark because it is positive and they don't want to put too much pressure on him. But, I think every New Zealand football fan is starting to hold their breath a little bit. I guess the only saving grace, well, Chris is without doubt our head and shoulders, our world-class player playing at the very, very top level. There are a swathe of Kiwis doing excellent things at their respective clubs. You know, one thing you will say about New Zealand in general and New Zealand teams, New Zealand athletes, when they have the opportunity to come together in some of these tournaments, more often than not they're able to pull something special. So, you know, we didn't have a player the caliber of Chris Wood at the top end of the pitch when we last were at the World Cup in 2010. It was at the other end of the pitch in terms of Ryan Nelson galvanizing and bringing that team together. So, look, we haven't always had the strike power, and if Chris Wood isn't one of those, well then it's up to the likes of Ben Waynes and those sorts of players. Callum McCowart, Costa Barbarousis, exactly right, to step into the breach, and I'm sure one way or another we will have we'll have Chris Wood involved somehow. With that World Cup campaign.
Even if he's at 50-60%, he probably is. You know, you do have in there decisions to be made, but you know, when we look at some of our footballers overseas, you know, we definitely, for a lot of listeners that follow New Zealanders, watch the story of Max Crocombe at Millwall. Watch the story of Elijah Just at Motherwell in the Scottish Premier League, and of course soon to be joined by possibly Jesse Randall at Dundee United.
Yeah, look, exactly right. Look, there's Kiwis doing wonderful things. It's a milestone moment for New Zealand, and it would be a terrible, terrible shame if Chris Wood wasn't to be able to make it on the pitch. But what an opportunity for some of these other young ones to try and emulate and follow in his footsteps and etch their name in history as well.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend, Seamus, and we'll catch up next Saturday, mate.
Thanks, Eamon.
Cheers. Seamus Martin, fantastic. Next up, we're going to talk to Jeff Simpson as we look at the Australian Open. Cheers, Shay. That was great, mate.
She gave him a melody to sing, gave him a special flavor. She speaks in a language as loving, he's an illiterate reader. She don't mince words. Got all that love in some time. It could make a great thing. And with the scream of a rhyme, I'd learn.
promises.
Even if so intentioned, promises are friendly. Come on, sing a seventh song, find each other's rhythm, and then we'll dance till we can more.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. Wow, we come to the final grand, the final of the first Grand Slam of the year. And wow, what, I think we've been in for it. This tournament has served up some great tennis, and especially last night. Wow, I think we were treated to two of the best semi-finals you'll ever see. But here to join us, the expert, the former Davis Cup captain, Jeff Simpson. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Eamon. How are you?
Yeah, excellent. I tell you something right now, Jeff. This tournament is just it's so good that I've been proven wrong on a number of things, items, especially when it comes to the men's game. And it's good for fellas that, you know, that seem, everyone says, oh, they're past it, they're gone, but they're always there. You can never run away from class. But we'll start it off with the women's. Obviously, Sabalenka just proves how good she is, doesn't she? Easily accounted for Spitalina, 6-2, 6-3. Bit of controversy at the end because they refused to shake hands. Obviously, animosity between the two countries has spilled out to the court. And of course, in the other semi final, Rabinka took a game for beat Pegula quite easily, 6-3, 7-6. So just your feelings as we go into this women's final.
Yeah, I mean, I watched, I hadn't seen Sabalenka play but one match against the young American girl, Jovic, and I thought, well, she's playing well, because Jovic was, you know, she's an up-and-comer and she's got a great career ahead of her, very courageous young girl, you know, goes after it and everything, and Sabalenka sort of counteracted that quite comfortably. And then watching against Svitolina, because Svitolina, you know, we saw her in Auckland and she's playing well, and as the tournament progressed in Australia, I mean, she was just getting better and better, and you'd think, well, you know, she's quick, she hits the ball nice and flat, she can move Sabalenka around, but Sabalenka gave her no chance to do that. She just came out from the gun and she just had her on the back foot the whole time. And I have to say, you know, I saw a different Sabalenka. I saw a really improved Sabalenka in her movement, the structure of her points. And she hits the ball so hard, but she was going, you know, a little bit more bigger target. And I thought she played very, very well. And, you know, just really gave Svitolina no chance. And, yeah, as you say, it is a little bit of a shame that that is that animosity. We don't like to see that in sport, obviously, but, you know, both very strong in their beliefs. So, you know, there's nothing we can really do about that. And, yeah, they've got to sort that out, really. But the next match, I thought, with Rybakina and Pegula was just sort of, she's very, very steady, and she plays a very, you know, she's very calm, very steady, good counter-puncher, but Rybakina just had a little bit more on her serve, just had a little bit more on her ground strokes, and that just a little bit of extra power drew the shorter ball, and she was able to put her away. So, you know, we should have a good final, but just on what I saw in both matches, I just feel Sabalenka will have the upper hand today, although, you know, we were seeing a lot of upsets. We could see another one, but I can't go away from what I saw. So I think Sabalenka should, you know, come out with a victory in that one.
Absolutely, and I think she just this is why she is the best player in the world, and probably the best player by a big gap at the moment. Well, I will say this. Yesterday when the first semi-final, Alcaraz 6-4, 7-5, 6-7, 6-7, 7-5 against Zverev, I thought nothing could top that, Jeff. Nothing at all. And then, oh God, this is what I mean. This, thank goodness they're not playing the next day because they both would have been stuffed. But Djokovic, 3-6, 6-3, 4-6, 6-4, 6-4 against Yannick Sinner. Now, I said it will be an Alcaraz Sinner final. It'll be either one of them will win this tournament. Well, I tell you something right now, Jeff. I am at 38 years of age. Djokovic, the way he was running around the court, it was like he was a 20-year-old. He had so much energy, Jeff.
Well, I think it played into his hands and, you know, kind of like the perfect storm a little bit where he got a default against Mensik, who we saw win the ASB and who was playing very, very well, I must say. And I think even Djokovic admit that would have been a really tough match for him, but he got a free ride there, so he conserved, you know, a match of energy. And then he was playing, you know, Musetti, and he was getting a real, as they say, woodshed beat down. You know, I mean, Musetti was just taking him to the cleaners, and something happened, and so, you know, he played two and a bit sets, so he's conserved a lot of energy, so he had the energy and the physical part to go in against Sinner, and I don't think he's had that a lot of the times when in these Grand Slams at all, because, you know, he is the best player in the world for a reason, and you know, we have to remember Australian Open is his best court. He just, you know, he's 110, he likes the surface, the ball comes on to him at the right height, everything's pretty good, and Sinner was, you know, Sinner usually overpowers him and goes in there, but Djokovic's movement this time was a lot better. I think what really, really saved him was his serve. I mean, Sinner, I looked at the stats, had 18 break points in the whole match and only converted two. And that's amazing. And then in the fifth set, he had 8 break points and didn't convert any. So that's a real telling factor. So Sinner was right there. He had his opportunities, but he just didn't convert. And I think in Sinner's case, you know, he was trying to, you know, finish the point like he usually does. I mean, he's playing his game, but he was trying to finish the point a little bit earlier. And I thought maybe, you know, just my observation, you know, Djokovic was, you know, after his long point, he was hunched over and getting his breath. I thought maybe, you know, maybe he should have really, you know, made the points go a little longer and sort of try to tire Djokovic out. But Djokovic's serve, number one, was fantastic, especially his one on the backhand side down the middle. Sam just couldn't really handle that. And then his forehand down the line, I mean, he really opened the court up with his forehand down the line with his accuracy. And, you know, we could see the Djokovic of old, you know, getting more and more confident as the match went on and, you know, being ready to play each point. You know, that's what was really impressive to me, the way he managed himself. And, you know, if he didn't have a chance at a point, he wouldn't go for it, you know. And so conserving his energy, but, you know, when he sensed an opportunity, he would really go after it. So I think, you know, number one in the world and the greatest player ever for a reason, and all those things that I sort of said, that sort of managed himself better in the situation, although he had the opportunity, you know.
And when you think about it, it's possibly if it he was, you know, in the quarterfinals he was down two sets to Musetti, then Musetti was injured, and so he got through on a retirement. So it's this just makes us outstanding. But Alcaraz, the ref, that was good as well.
That was incredible. I think, you know, the way, again, I mean, the controversy at 4-4, you know, in the third set where, you know, he looked like he'd actually, I thought he had injured himself when he stretched for that shot. And then he sat down and he talked to the physio when he came on the court, and then it's not Alcaraz's decision to have a medical timeout. It's up to the physio, and the physio decided to grant a medical timeout and, you know, obviously help them, you know, massaging it out. But you know, when cramps are coming on like that, he sort of just waded his way through it and just stayed out there. And one time I saw him walk to the net and I thought, oh, he's going to default. And then he just veered to the side back to his chair again and, you know, decided that he was just going to sort of wait it out. And he just waited it out. And then obviously the cramp went away a little bit better and more. And so in the fifth set, we just saw, you know, the real Alcaraz again. And, you know, he just rescued himself. I mean, it was incredible how, you know, Zverev actually had the opportunities to serve out for the match. Just couldn't quite do it. Alcaraz sort of rises to that occasion again, as we've seen on many, many occasions. He just has that real, real belief, and he's not scared to go after it. And Zverev didn't play bad. I mean, he served really well. And, you know, I thought he was backed off when he could have won the second set when he was up 5-2. He just backed off a little bit there. Didn't quite believe. But as the match progressed, he, you know, he played better and better and better. So, you know, the standard of tennis was very, very high. And you can take nothing away from Zverev. I mean, he matched him toe-to-toe. And I just think in the end, Zverev's fitness just... he just looked a little tighter than Alcaraz, you know, one or two steps, you know, slower. Which you can't blame him. They're playing for 5.5 hours. So, yeah, great drama. A lot of theatrics, of course, but also phenomenal tennis. And as you said before, you know, to see two matches like that, you know, that's a rarity.
Absolutely. And of course, as we look forward to it, you know, I really, my head says Alcaraz, but my heart says Djokovic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, before the match, I think if you'd asked just about everybody except the Serbians who were going to win that match, everybody would have said Sinner, you know. And so it's the same thing here. I think the big thing is how well Djokovic recovers from that five-setter. It didn't go as long as the Alcaraz one. You know, it was a little over 4 hours, but how well he can bounce back and come out and play him. But Alcaraz is a different player. Sinner is very predictable and plays very much like Djokovic. You know, they're both really aggressive baseliners. The ball's coming in at the right, you know, the right place for Djokovic. Whereas Alcaraz sort of mixes it up a little bit. He's going to be drop-shotting, you know, he's going to be rallying, and all of a sudden he's going to step in and just whack one, you know. So it's a different matchup. And I think that matchup may make a little bit of difference. And I think it'll be the, you know, the athleticism of Alcaraz if he, well, I think he should recover pretty good because he's a lot younger. It'll be his, that type of sort of unpredictability that he brings to the game, and the confidence that he has with that, that'll probably be the difference in the match. And I think Djokovic will have, you know, looking at what you see, Djokovic will have, you know, a pretty tough time counteracting that. But on the other hand, he is, as we've spoken, you know, he is going for his 25th Grand Slam. He is the greatest player in the world still. Got to give him that. So it's going to be a contest, hopefully.
Absolutely. Well, Jeff, you have a fantastic weekend. Yep. And we will no doubt catch up when we're ready for the... in a few months' time, as we get ready for the French Open.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
Cool. Cheers. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Jeff Simpson, brilliant, isn't he? Okay, so next up we're going to have the panel of Andy Thompson and Mark Watson. Just before we go any further, just a few things. A special thanks to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. Force Electrical, water smart for all your water tanks. Robert Thompson from Barford and Thompson. These are the people that keep the lights on, keep me on here, along with myself putting money into the show. But what we are looking for, we're looking for new sponsors. So feel free to drop me a text on 027-33-84-888 if you're keen to have a sponsorship. If you like what we're doing here, we'd greatly appreciate it. Just on another note, yesterday we said goodbye to the manager here, Brent Harbour. Brent, hell of a good guy. Really, to be honest with you, his year with me on working with him for a year, he became the deal breaker I needed. He got what I done on this show, and he understood it. And we're really going to miss you, Brent. All the best. You have all the best in your new opportunities. So good luck to Brent. Anyway, enough of my ramblings, and I'll put on a bit of music, and I'll get Watto, and I'll get Andy Thompson on.
Well, I started out down a dirty road. Started out all alone, and the sun went down as I crossed the hill, and the town lit up. The world gets still. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Coming down is the hardest thing. Well, the good old days may not return, the rocks might melt, and the sea may burn. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Coming down is the hardest thing. Some say life will beat you down and break your heart, steal your crown. So I've started out for God knows where. I guess I'll know when I get there. I'm learning to fly around the clouds. What goes up must come down. The hardest thing.
Welcome everyone back to the sports weekend. We're nearly there at the end, so we go to the panel. Line one, international renowned broadcaster, a good sports journalist, calls it the way he sees it, and that's what I like about him. Man, the legend, Mark Watson. How are you, Mark?
You're very well, thank you, Eamon. Morning to you and your listeners.
And on line two, he's been a newbie. He's been invited recently to the show. He is the Kamara kid from the West Coast, Andy Thompson. Good morning, Andy.
G'day, Eamon. G'day, Watto, mate. Good to talk to you.
Yep.
Yeah, absolute icon, mate.
Absolutely. Who are you talking about, me or Thompson?
Thompson and you, mate.
I love your work, Watto. I do love your work. This is why you're on the show. Okay, we might as well kick it off. The All Blacks have named, New Zealand Rugby's named the criteria for what should be an All Blacks coach. They've got to be New Zealand born. They've got to have international experience. And obviously, there's been a few people saying, well, you know, how are they going to gain it? Do our top coaches have to go overseas? I totally agree with the concept, because I think the rest of the world has caught up to New Zealand, and you've got to have that intellectual property from overseas coaching. Watto, starting with you, mate.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think for a long time, though, we've let too many good coaches go overseas. You know, we spent so much time worrying about trying to retain our top players, and somehow the All Blacks are not going to win if we don't keep certain players here. And I'm like, you know what? This is what we're paying you. The All Black jersey doesn't mean that much to you, and it's only going to be money that keeps you here. Let them go. And I think particularly under Hansen and stuff, that sort of it was a little bit like, well, as long as we've got Steve Hansen, as long as we've got me, we don't really need a lot of other coaches. And we saw some really, really good coaches go overseas, but maybe not a lot of communication or discussion with the powers to be at New Zealand Rugby. And I think the Northern Hemisphere's benefited from, you know, if you do look over the years, whether you look at Joe Schmidt, whether you look at Vern Cotter, Chris Boyd out of Wellington, then you throw in some of our players that have gone and played in the UK, they've actually benefited from us in terms of intellectual property. Then, you know, they've also then evolved in the Northern Hemisphere way of playing's actually been a bit of a game changer. So the Northern Hemisphere has benefited from us, but we need to now actually start tapping back into that IP that's spent time up in the Northern Hemisphere, and we've always neglected to do that. So we now find ourselves in a bit of a conundrum where we don't really have, arguably, maybe a lot of coaches wanting to apply for the All Black job or are free to apply for the All Black job. So look, I honestly think that at the end of the day, it comes down to everyone saying the same thing, Jamie Joseph and Dave Rennie. It'd be great if we could get that combination together, wouldn't it?
Mm.
If those two could work together, then I think we've got plenty of sort of old heads, and both have had, and I think it's not so much about international coaching experience, I think it's about just having, you know, overseas coaching experience, having just been in different environments, different cultures, where you've got to adjust your leadership style, the type of athlete that you do got, and trying to say, hey, look, you know, we've got to, you know, I've got to be able to get the best out of so many different types of athletes.
Absolutely. Andy, your thoughts on this?
Mate, I don't think it's that complicated. If the All Blacks want to be the best team in the world, and we go back to being the best rugby team in the world, surely we deserve to have the best coach in the world, don't we? I don't think it's that complicated. I don't care where they come from. I just want to see us winning. Look, if the English football team can have a foreign coach, I don't see any reason why the All Blacks can't have a foreign coach. I don't think it's that complicated, quite frankly. I agree with Watto. We've exported our expertise. They've caught up, and a lot of cases, some of them are better than us. If we keep doing the same as we've always done, we'll get what we've got. You know what I mean. We'll keep in this cycle of mediocrity. I think it needs a shake up, and so I don't care where the coach comes from. We just want the best coach in the world, whoever that is. And if it is Jamie Joseph, fine. If it's not, let's go and have a look. Let's have a proper look, because by saying they've got to come from New Zealand, we've just ruled out about 95% of the world's rugby coaches. Simple.
Mark, you said something very interesting. I heard you on Martin Devlin's podcast. You said that you popped the idea of someone like, not as head coach, but someone like Stephen Larkham coming into the All Blacks coaching setup.
Oh, no, look, I sort of go along the lines of what Andy is saying too. Like, I wouldn't have a problem if we, you know, just going back to what he was saying. I mean, would you tune down Andy Farrell if he put his hand up and said, I want to coach the All Blacks? I've sort of run out of a little bit of interest. Would you, you'd jump at Rassie Erasmus, wouldn't you, if he was putting his hand up and saying, hey, I want to be the All Black coach? But yeah, look, I just think we need a fresh set of eyes. I think we just need something different. I just look at a guy like Larkham. I think he understands the New Zealand game, but he's not too close to it. He's done good thing with, done great things with the Brumbies. And we do have to be a little bit more innovative in terms of these so-called assistants. But there's been a lot of discussion, hasn't there? And I just want to make this point.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of discussion around the retention of these so-called assistant coaches. You know, do we keep Jason Ryan? Do we keep Scott Hansen and all these different guys? I'm like, if we actually get the right head coach in, we don't need the assistant coach. Because I just want two guys who can actually coach the forwards, who can actually coach the backs, who's actually at training with a bloody tracksuit on, up close and personal, actually telling our guys to set a scrum. Now, I've no problem with a couple of technical guys. You know, I think Owen Franks I saw him doing some really good things in terms of the Japanese scrum. So you want some guys there saying, hey, you know, yeah, you just need to get your weight a bit further forward. You need to put more energy through, you know, certain parts of your body, and some of those technical guys. But yeah, I think we do have to have a combination of experience, youthful exuberance, but we also have to have, something different. And I think different at the moment, we're not going to find in New Zealand.
Andy, I'm agreeing, beginning to agree with Watto. Like, as soon as you float something different, why does it have to be a New Zealander? You know, I think now we've got to be realistic. We're just a rugby team now, and we've got to get the best. If we want to be the best, we get the best people involved.
Oh, it's almost the reverse of the old Kiwi cultural cringe, right? We always used to think everything from the west of the rest of the world was better than us, except when it comes to rugby. I just think we need to open up our eyes. We need to, look, if we have a Kiwi as All Black coach, fantastic. If we don't, and it's the best coach, brilliant. And I agree with Watto about the assistants. I think too much. It's almost like there's too much weight put on who the assistants are. Surely they are there to do what the coach wants them to do, and he gets to pick them. So that's the, you know, that's the reality of it. So yeah, I just look. I don't know. It is probably 99%. It's going to be Jamie Joseph and who else with him. But by cutting off, you know, making that rule that they've got to come from New Zealand, we've just limited our options unbelievably. So yeah, we'll just have to wait and see, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, Andy, we've had a bit of cricket going on. Obviously, the Black Caps, they've lost the series to and a very good Indian side in the 2020s, but had a good win. And of course, then we come to the final of our domestic 2020 competition. Now, first of all, I'm going to be straight to the point. This so-called league, which is going to be ran by an Indian investment, I'm totally against it because I think we keep it as it is, and I think there's just too much 2020. Just your thoughts, Andy.
Look, I had a very, very interesting conversation with Chris Harris about this a wee while ago, and I can't quote directly what he said, but basically he said the money involved from Indian cricket and the money that is being splashed around for New Zealand cricket, and we put ourselves very, very firmly in the Indian cricket camp probably, what, 5-10 years ago, whenever it was. What do you remember this? When we kind of went with the Indian, with the East over the Poms, the South Africans and the Aussies, and that's made a lot of money for New Zealand cricket over the last 10 years, and it continues to do so. Well, I think it's going to be very, very difficult for us to turn it down. In a sport when sponsorship is incredibly difficult to get hold of, we know it's all betting money and TV rights, but I can see it happening, I honestly can. And putting one of our teams or two of our teams in the Big Bash, I can't really see that working. And if it manages to hold players in New Zealand because they're getting serious coin, I want to agree with you. I don't particularly like it.
Nah.
I love Test cricket. But it's commercial reality, isn't it?
It is commercial reality. Your feelings on this, Watto? I know that you've got an opinion on this one, mate.
Yeah, look, I mean, firstly, I don't put too much weight on T20 cricket. You know, I don't care. You know, like, I took a little bit out of us winning the one-day games and then winning that series 2-1. But the T20 cricket, it's like, there's just so much of it. One player can take a game away. It's not necessarily if you've got to have six or seven all firing at once. But look, the domestic game in this country, I mean, who really cares? Does anyone actually watch it? Does anyone actually, you know, we don't exactly have a ticker tape parade or sort of a mural reception of Auckland Aces going and win this thing. So, you know, but I look at just the general administration of New Zealand cricket. Isn't it an absolute disgrace? Here we are in January and February, we haven't had one test series at all here in New Zealand. In fact, we've got New Zealand playing in India, which is technically their winter at the moment. Well, we've got nothing going on. And yes, I know we're being dictated to by India, but we've just got to be better than that. So look, if this new T20 concept is something that can be played in February and attract some of the best players and can somehow provide some aspiration and provide some audience and get some buy-in from the younger generation, it's only got to be good for cricket. But I just think cricket's just lost its identity at the moment. It's trying to be everything to everyone. The only people that seem to benefit from it, I reckon, are the bookmakers in India and obviously the players.
Absolutely. Any thoughts on that, Andy?
Oh, look, I'm not disagreeing, but I just think if the thing about domestic cricket is we have no, New Zealand cricket has no right to be as good as we are. Our player base is absolutely minute, tiny compared to the rest of the world. We've got a very good domestic league, which is the feeder that brings our players through into our international league, which means we are currently, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but the number one ranked ODI team in the world. We're probably in the top four of best cricket playing nations in the world. Where we are, T20, I agree, I don't care. It doesn't really matter. It's like a bottle of Fanta, isn't it? You drink it and 5 minutes later you've forgotten about it. It's just gone. But if it does bring, and the domestic league or our domestic cricket brings players through, I'm sitting in St Albans Park in Christchurch right now. I'm watching two games of cricket going on. There's probably 40 or 50 people sitting around watching it. It is a beautiful, beautiful sight. For me, that is what cricket is about. And these guys feed in, and guys and girls, by the way, feed into our domestic leagues. And if there's money there to keep them going, to feed the Black Caps and the White Ferns, I can't argue against it.
Yeah, hey, just on that too, I think if you're going to do this, and I'm looking at it, but even from a tourism point of view, I'd like to see grounds like Molyneux Park and Alexandra further developed, because I just think they are the most stunning grounds, obviously, Queenstown. You know, it'd be nice to get back to Pukekura Park in New Plymouth, one of the most beautiful cricket grounds. And, you know, then cricket and these regions can actually sort of almost say, look, fly into the region, watch a T20 Super League Cup game, or whatever they might end up calling it, pick up a couple of vineyards and, you know, turn this whole thing into sort of a bit of a tourism package and make it just more than just a game, but actually make it about a weekend. And I think that's where cricket have got to be smarter. But yeah, again, as Andy said, just take it to these, to the beautiful venues, just make it almost irresistible, where you can just sort of sit there, you've got the cricket on the background, you're just surrounded by, you know, I don't want to see it being played at Eden Park, I don't want to see it being played at, you know, the Cape Town and Wellington, just a waste of absolute time. I mean, you know, there is nothing appealing about those particular stadiums. You know, if you're going to play it at the Basin Reserve, make it accessible, make it an experience, make it enjoyable, and showcase the country.
Absolutely. Anyway, Sam Root, what a fantastic young kid this kid is. Obviously, world records for 16 and 17-year-olds in the mile. He's just, this kid is hopefully going to be our next great athlete on the world circuit. Also, I think we tend to, you know, Craig Kirkwood's been brilliant. Also, Sam Tanner, I think it could be a big year for Sam Tanner.
Yeah, Sam Tanner, I mean, you know, the thing with Sam is, you know, his improvements are going to be really, really marginal. And he's in another golden era of middle distance athletics, but he certainly is good enough. But I don't think people really understand Sam Root's running 3:53 for a mile at 16. People don't realise running 1:45 for 800 as a 16-year-old, how freakish that is. I mean, that is outlier probably in the history of New Zealand sport for a young athlete. Now, the challenge for him is still to kick on, see if he can still take it to the next level. But, you know, I know Craig well. I used to coach Craig when he was doing Ironman. So we've always had that relationship, and I've picked his brains in terms of training loads and volumes. And, you know, always you've got to ask those questions. Is he going to reach a ceiling and not kick on, as we see with too many juniors? But this kid, I mean, to run 3:38 at New Zealand secondary schools on your own. John Walker won gold in 1976 and 3:39. Now, it was a slow final, admittedly, but gives you an idea of just how good this is. There's another, just on that, I was at a swim meet yesterday, and I can't pronounce the young man's last name. He's an African kid. He comes out of Zimbabwe. He's living here now. You don't tend to see too many African swimmers historically, or black athletes, if I can use that. I mean that with the greatest respect.
Yep.
I remember Anthony Nesty, 1988, winning from Suriname.
From Suriname, yep.
We've got this 16-year-old kid out of Zimbabwe who's tall, who yesterday I saw over 200 metres, short course, a 25-metre pool, swim a 1:47.5 for 200. Now, when Daniel Logan won gold at the Atlanta Olympics in 1996, admittedly long course, so a little bit harder, he was swimming 1:47. And this kid here, I just sat there yesterday, and I just saw something in this young man, and I just thought, mate, our next great swimmer is going to be this kid. And he comes from Zimbabwe, and we're lucky to have him here. And his first name is Ariel, so just remember the name.
Yeah, I'm just trying to look that up right now, Watto. And when you look at it, like, we're getting these young kids coming through. Now, you know, one thing we've always done well out of, and, you know, I hope, Winston, you're not listening, but we've always done well out of of immigrants coming to this country. Like, we've done well, especially in cricket, with a lot of South African immigrants coming to that. So you know, I look at these young talent coming through. I think it's fantastic. What's your views on Andy? What's your views on Sam Rope?
Look, mate, I'm your classic Olympic athletics expert. So I'm not like Watto. I don't live and breathe it, right? So that's me. I get really, really expert while the Olympics are on, or while the Commonwealth Games are on, or why the World Champs are on. But other than that, I don't follow it. But I'll tell you, I've picked up on this kid, Root. I've been watching the YouTube videos of him from around the world, and these are proper athletics commentators in absolute awe of what this kid's doing. 16, you know, these world records that this kid is doing. Fast in the world, I think, so what are you, you're going to quote it off, but fastest in the world for his age for the 800, I think, under fastest for his age to ever go under the mile. He did a 1K race the other day, which was the fastest. I think he's the sixth fastest, he's the sixth fastest 1500 Kiwi athlete ever, I think. If he can stay healthy and his training regime, and I'm pleased you know who it is, and can, you know, maybe if that kid can stay healthy, we're going to see a black jersey running down the home straight in the Olympics in the 1500 metres, and we're going to get another gold. And man, that is exciting. I mean, I'm still buzzing over the over what happened at the World Athletic Champs last year, you know, but the Olympics is a step further on from that. So I just think it's phenomenal. And I agree with you 100%, Watto. New Zealand hasn't woken up to this kid yet. And when they do, he'll be a household name in like 5 minutes. And he'll be, they'll go, oh, where'd this kid come from? And people know he's been doing it. I'm actually really excited now to watch. Well, yeah. Give me is it March the 3rd? TVNZ are doing that that athletics night. They're all broadcasting the whole thing. What's that? Talk to me about that, because I want to watch that live. That's going to be a great night of Kiwi athletics.
Is that the Graham Douglas International meet, Watto?
Yeah, I've commented that previously at Waitakere Stadium. But yeah, I mean, you've got Sam Ruth, you've got Sam Tanner, you've obviously, you know, got Hamish Kerr, and we've got some real good brand athletes starting to come through that people are starting to become household names. But look, just for you, Andy, just to try and put sort of Ruth in context, it'd be a bit like taking Winks and Bone Crusher and putting them together, mate. That's what you've got, you know. Take a great Bone Crusher, take Winks, put them together on one athlete, and you've got a superstar, haven't you? Almost unbeatable. You've got a kid who's got the speed, but has also got the endurance, got a big heart, and just doesn't appear to have any limits.
I was just going to say, and just on that, you mentioned Sam Tanner, and I think what Sam Tanner's doing in his own right, but also to compete and to give Root competition and getting out there and not being afraid to get beaten. I don't know the personalities of either of those kids or these guys, but I just think it's incredible what Tanner's doing to support him. Is that the case or not? Tell me, Watto. I'm not sure.
Watto?
Sorry, you just dropped out there for a moment.
Paraphrase that,
Adam. Yeah, well, basically, what he's, if you can paraphrase that again, because I was pretty right. Sorry, Andy.
So what I was saying, what I was like, I think Sam Tanner is doing an incredible job working with Sam Root. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know whether it's just coincidence or Sam is going to take him under his wing. He's competing against him. He's not being afraid to lose to him. I don't know what the personalities of the two are. But from the outside, it looks like Sam Tanner is doing an incredible job with them.
Yeah, look, Craig Kirkwood just has this training group which is just, they push each other, and it's just getting bigger and bigger. You go down to Tauranga, go around to Mount Maunganui and see some of the workouts these guys are doing on the Saturday. And, you know, it's all about training groups. You go back into the 70s and you had Walker Quacks and Dixon all training, Dave Moorcroft and some of the greats coming down here, and they push each other. But, you know, Sam Tanner is a guy who's, would I say he's got a strong faith? He certainly has pretty strong convictions. There's no ego there. He also knows that, you know, he's got to embrace it, that, you know, to stay number one, train as if you're number two. If this guy's as good as he is, he's only going to benefit from it. You want to always be, you know, if you're number one, train as if you're number two. Keep aspiring, but keep being pushed. Mm. I'd imagine that Ruth will be showing Tanner what can be done. I'm not sure we would have seen Sam Tanner go under 146 for 800 if it wasn't for Sam Ruth. So they're both going to benefit from it. He's only going to become a better athlete of it. He won't be sitting there going, oh, man, this kid's so lucky, 16, why don't I have that challenge? I'm not going to show him my training secrets. He knows we live in a small country. He knows we don't have a lot of critical mass, and it's his best interest if they do work together. But also I think it's the leadership of Craig Kirkwood and just that training group as a whole.
Absolutely. And just to sign off, Andy, another a West Coaster on the world scene, Paul Coe, unfortunately lost in the final in New York of the latest on the latest World Squash Show. But what a great he's an athlete I don't think really gets the praise here in New Zealand.
Now, look, Paul Coe, the Greymouth kid, he came home over Christmas, actually. I never caught up with him, but I know his family very, very well, and they're incredibly proud. The Cole family is a great Greymouth family.
Oh, yeah.
He came home to run the... He's bought a bakery, actually, with his, I think, with his brother or cousin, so they came home to... the bakery's called the Dooduck Inn. Just on the main street of Greymouth. So, I think he came home to check out the bakery and probably have a few pies. If you're ever in Greymouth, that's definitely the place to go to. So if you want to support Paul Coe, go and buy a pie or a sausage roll or a custard square from the Dooduck Inn Bakery.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just going to probably cut it off a bit earlier. Watto, thank you so much, mate. I know you're busy at the moment, but really appreciate your time, as per
usual. Yeah, no worries. No, sorry, slightly poor phone reception. Hey, I just want to say regarding the bakery... personally, mate, I don't put two stroke in the Ferrari, mate. Hey, I'm only carrot, lettuce, and high octane, mate.
Come on, you've got to support Paul. Come on, Watto. Come on,
Watto. You've got to have nothing like a West Coast like pie.
Body's a temple.
Yeah, well, my body's a temple too, Watto. It's a temple of doom.
I am partial to a little bit of the old bakery food, mate, to be fair.
Anyway, hey, Andy, thank you so much for making yourself free. By the way, fantastic. I saw a photo of you with your fantastic moulet about 30-odd years ago, and congratulations to you and your wife on your wedding anniversary.
Thanks very much, mate. Yes, the...